Welcome to the Legacy Podcast. This podcast is a series of conversations centered around understanding the values, beliefs, and intentions behind leaving a legacy. You will hear from successful business owners just like yourself who want to leave an impact for generations to come. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Business Legacy Podcast. My name is Kirk Chisholm, and I will be your host today. So join us on our journey where we talk with business owners like yourself about their successes and failures and legacy that they want to leave behind. Whether you're a present business owner, recently retired owner, or you're looking to build a legacy, we tear down the walls of cultural sensitivity to help you explore your own legacy. What do you want your legacy to look like? This week, we're interviewing Cameron Bishop. How are you today, Cameron?
Good. Thank you, Kirk.
Good
to be here.
Good. Well, we brought Cameron on because, you know, as business owners go through the life cycle of their business, from starting it to growing it to kind of a transition to the next generation, that transition process is not something people talk about or think about too much. So we wanted to bring on Cameron to really talk through that and really what you as a business owner should be expecting. So, Cameron, tell us about your background.
Sure. Well, I spent the vast majority of my career running what are called leveraged roll-up companies. Those are companies sponsored by private equity firms where we go out and buy a large platform company, and then over a course of 3 to 5 or maximum 7 years, acquire a lot of additional strategic, what we refer to as tuck-in businesses to build an even larger corporate entity, and then those are packaged and sold off. So over the course of my career, I've acquired or sold somewhere around 70 different companies. So it gives you a broad array of and perspective on businesses. And to buy one company, you usually have to review and evaluate anywhere from 20 to 50 companies. So over the course of a career, I've probably had the opportunity to look deep into probably at least 500 companies.
Wow, that's a lot. So what, after looking at 500 companies, what did you learn? What did you take away from that?
Well, it's one of the reasons I'm working in the business I'm in today with Raincatcher, which is a lower middle market M&A firm and a sophisticated business brokerage firm with a national footprint. We focus on helping business owners and represent them to sell their company and maximize value. But before joining this company, I spent 5 years as a partner in a boutique consulting firm working with business owners to do appropriate exit and transition planning. And the reason I have such a passion in this area is because over the years doing roll-ups, I saw so many small business owners make so many mistakes in trying to sell their companies and usually selling them to us, which caused them to leave a lot of money on the table. And now I'm on the other side of that, trying to help them avoid those problems and to maximize their exit value for their trust and estates. And as you say, Kirk, truly for their legacy, whether it's for family members, charities, or however they want to disperse their worth.
Yeah, you mentioned mistakes. Let's talk about that. What are some of the mistakes that you've seen that business owners make frequently?
Well, they break down into two categories. They break down into what you might call the technical side of the process, which is, you know, everything from organizational structure to financial aspects of the business. And then there are the personal elements of any kind of a divestiture. And I found in my consulting practice that my work was about 50-50. I would call 50% of it technical work, and about 50% of it was what I referred to as Dr. Phil work. And the real challenge is so many business owners are so consumed with running their business. It's pretty much their life. For any CEO or business owner, running a company is absolutely a 24/7, 365 job in the best of circumstances, that they don't really spend much time thinking about what life looks like beyond the ownership and management of a company. So we try to focus a fair amount on that. But where we really see the negative effects from a value creation standpoint, most of those are on the technical side of the business. And a lot of them are very fundamental. And probably the first and biggest devaluing aspect for business owners is if the business is either solely or virtually almost completely reliant on them. Buyers of companies don't like to see that. They see that as a very high risk element, and they'll either walk away from an acquisition or they'll substantially devalue it to reflect the perceived risk that they're taking on if that business owner walks away. So that's probably devaluing factor number one for business owners.
So how can people address that? I mean, obviously, you know, if they're going to walk away, then there's not much you can do. But how can a business owner address that if that is their problem?
Yeah, one of the challenges there, and again, honestly, as a in doing business development in the consulting business, it was an ongoing frustrating challenge because generally business owners don't understand that it takes, in a perfect world, 1 to 3 years to properly prepare a company for sale if they're going to sell. And most business owners don't have that much pre-planning or vision. Many literally wake up one day and say, that's it, I'm done, I'm selling. And they begin the process to try to exit. And that's in and of itself is a devaluing factor in the process. But if they will take the time and have the vision and foresight to begin working ahead, they can develop an organizational structure which will make the company or allow the company to be either no longer reliant on them as an individual or vastly reduce the reliance on them and hopefully have a succession plan in place for the firm that comes in to buy their business.
So it sounds like there's a good bit of business coaching that goes on here to get people ready. So, you know, how should people look at that if they're, you know, if they're going through that? Should they be hiring a business coach, or is that something you work with them on, or how does that work?
Yes and yes. So definitely a business coach can be an extremely valuable asset for any CEO. And that's true whether they're selling the company or not, because again, as I mentioned, it truly is lonely at the top for business owners. Most of them don't have a reliable source that they can turn to for truly independent, non-biased advice. You know, the spouse of a business owner is obviously going to have an emotional connection. A lot of business owners will turn to other senior managers, but in almost all cases, they have some kind of vested interest, or they're so close to the business, they don't have the external perspective. And friends often aren't the source because, again, of the trust element, or they just don't truly understand the business. So a business coach can be a really positive investment in both money and time for business owners. At Raincatcher, we actually have a separate division focused on working with business owners to do their exit and transition planning, value creation. We have an entire program called Value Builder, or just executive coaching to work with business owners.
Okay, so you have a part of your firm that helps them with this. I am a little bit familiar with Value Builder, so I think that's a great program. So you mentioned it takes 1 to 3 years to prep a company to sell. What are some of the things that you'd work with them on to get them ready? So some of them may be well run, maybe it's not relying on the business owner, but generally speaking, what are some things that people need to be thinking about as they're selling their business?
Yeah, there are a number of value drivers or value creators for business owners. And as you've mentioned, the Value Builder program is an excellent program. I think they've done testing on something like 50,000 companies worldwide over 30 or 40 years. So their system is very legitimate and well proven. We use that tool for our clients. In fact, we'll do a Value Builder assessment at no charge for anyone who wants to contact us in that regard. But you know, probably number two after the degree of dependence that a company has on its CEO, or I might add any other single point of failure in a company. if you have some type of extremely valuable expert in the business who either deliberately or unknowingly hoards knowledge or expertise, that's another critical factor that buyers look at. If the business could fail, if one person won the lottery and left, or just decided to leave for any other reason, that's a key factor. But probably next thing we see most often are poorly kept financials. It's surprising how many highly successful, highly profitable businesses really don't have solid financials. They're not on a formalized QuickBooks system at a minimum or any other basic accounting system. They don't really understand their cash flow structure. They don't have formalized balance sheets. And any buyer is going to want to see that. And focusing on proper financial reporting and structuring can be a critical aspect of driving value creation. You can identify where there's upside opportunities in a business or where there are opportunities to cut expenses, which will impact the bottom line. And since all companies are ultimately purchased based on some kind of a multiple of either revenues or adjusted profits, and then let's say, for example, if a buyer buys a business with at a 4x the adjusted EBITDA multiple, every dollar a business owner can drop to the bottom line, that's worth $4 in value creation or whatever the multiplier is. And that's generally a change in thinking that a business owner needs to go through when they're preparing a business for sale. They're no longer preparing a business for the cash flow. If they're a pass-through entity, an S-Corp, an LLC, obviously the profits go into their pocket at the end of the year, or they're managing the business for tax avoidance purposes. But when you're preparing to sell, optimizing value creation is highly driven by how many dollars you can drop to the bottom line and then benefit from that multiplier on valuation at exit.
Okay. So, you know, you're talking about the financials, which I know are obviously really important. And I know a lot of business owners have messy financials because they mix their personal with their business. And, you know, I see that a lot. They're not all that clean. So, you know, what is it that is actually calculated when you know, buyers are looking at the business? Because I know every business is different, but, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, there's certain metrics that they're actually looking for. So what do those look like?
That's a great question, Kirk. Yeah, we call it EOB, which stands for excess owner benefit. And over the years, again, having looked at hundreds and hundreds of companies, I've seen some pretty creative and amazing ways that business owners fund their private lives through their business. You know, having multiple family members on the payroll, multiple company cars for family members. I think the record number of airplanes I've seen charged off against a company is 3 by a business owner who was an avid pilot. So there are just an amazing number of I'll call them write-offs or pass-throughs that business owners will take. So if we're representing a client, we spend an extensive amount of time with them reviewing their financials on a detailed level. And that's even if they have solid financials, trying to identify these costs that would not reoccur under another business owner. And then that results in what we refer to on larger companies north of $1 million in EBITDA as adjusted EBITDA. Or if they're on smaller companies, they're referred to as seller's discretionary earnings. So we try to do what we can to work with business owners to identify and carve out those costs and create a rationalized income statement as it would appear under a different business owner who's not trying to exploit some of those personal cost opportunities that they flow through a business.
Okay, good. You know, one of the challenges that people have, I find, is as they're going into this transition is kind of the psychological part. So What are some examples that you've seen when working with business owners where people's kind of head gets in the way of the transition?
Yeah, I've seen some kind of fascinating cases in that regard. Just a couple of simple true stories. I one time acquired a business from an extremely talented business owner in New York. She ran a company that she successfully built, and I believe we paid her $7 million for that business. And it's typical the case in an acquisition like that, the buyers ask the business owner to stay on with the company in some capacity for at least 6 to 12 months as a means of risk mitigation and knowledge transfer. And most often that's done on a consulting basis. And in this case, with this business owner, that's the structure we created. We put her on a one-year consulting agreement with a pretty handsome salary and some incentives tied to it. And that was coupled with the $7 million we paid for her business. And to her credit, she had groomed a very strong successor. So on completion of the acquisition, we moved her successor into the number one position, and the former owner became a consultant. She still kept an office in the company. But what happens in these cases is there are several dynamics that occur. First, the former business owner becomes less valuable on an increasing basis because the knowledge transfer occurs pretty quickly. And if there's a skilled and groomed successor, know most of that information anyway. So the business owner often finds themselves with a declining purpose in the business and a declining sense of importance. Another factor that can often occur is a case of resentment of the employee base who sees the business owner, whether it's right or wrong, it's just a perceived situation, and I've seen it multiple times, that the business owner reaped tremendous financial rewards off of the work that the employees did. So they develop somewhat of a sense of resentment towards that business owner. And in this case, that business owner became so despondent that I received an emergency phone call from my new executive in that office that the former owner had come in and taken essentially the company hostage by bringing in chains and padlocks and padlocking and chaining up all the file cabinets in the company so that the employees couldn't access their work. So I literally had to talk that manager down off of the proverbial ledge and negotiate a fairly unpleasant buyout of her contract because none of the employees could work with her anymore. So I've always believed that if someone had worked with her in advance to understand how her life was going to be post-sale of the company, that she might have been able to avoid that emotional meltdown in that case. And it was just it was a sad situation. She left with a lot of money, but she didn't leave with a sense of a purpose and I think satisfaction that she probably deserved based on the great work she did building her company. Another quick funny story is I know a case of a man who couldn't wait to sell his company. He was an avid golfer and he was going to play golf every day. And, knock a lot of strokes off of his handicap. Well, 3 months into that, he had been playing golf 7 days a week. And I think not only had his handicap not declined, but it had gotten worse. And he became so disenchanted and frustrated, he literally threw his clubs in the lake at the golf course. So those are the kind of things that people need to think through more and to manage those expectations of what life looks like post sale of a company.
Yeah, no, those are great, great stories. I appreciate that. And I think, so how do you address that? I mean, I would imagine most business owners have some, I guess I would call it psychological baggage with the transition process, right? I mean, they've been running the business for 10, 20, 40 years, and now they're just going to move on. And I imagine that there's a lot of mixed feelings about that. So how do you address that early on? Because, maybe to different degrees it affects people, but, A, what's a good time to address it? And B, like, how do you address it?
Well, again, in a perfect world, if they begin to address it at least a year, if not 2 to 3 years prior to their goals to put the company up for sale, that's the optimum time. But if a business owner approaches us about selling their company, the first question we ask is, why do you want to sell? And in a lot of cases, they don't really have a good answer. And they don't really have a vision for what they want to do after that, after the company is sold. So we spend a fair amount of time talking with them about that factor before we even get into the, as I referred to earlier, the technical sides of the business. Because a lot of times, it's a little bit selfish on one hand, because a lot of times a business owner will go down the path to selling a company, which is an extremely time-consuming, rigorous, and nerve-wracking process in the best of circumstances. And they finally said, you know what? This isn't worth it. I'm just going to continue to run my business. And then, you know, we've both invested a lot of time on a process that's not going to come to fruition. So we really want to understand what their drivers and motivators are before we get started, and what their ultimate objective is in the process. And another factor I think that's characteristic of most of these owners is that once they successfully sold the company and they wake up and they realize they don't really have the purpose or the social structure, value gratification that they once had, but they do have money, they surprisingly become very risk averse. So they want to invest their money in safe resources or safe sources or investment portfolios, but they're not willing to take the kinds of risks that they took throughout their entire career in running a business. It's a fascinating dynamic, and I've seen that over and over again with business owners post-sale.
Yeah, it's interesting. We come across this a lot, where the skill sets that an entrepreneur has to run a successful business are the exact opposite skill sets that it takes to be a really successful investor. And it's really interesting, because entrepreneurs, even though people think that they're big risk takers, I would characterize them as just they're really good risk managers, is they know how to manage risk really well. And for whatever, for obvious reasons, being an investor is a very different skill set and almost the exact opposite way of thinking than being a good entrepreneur. But I know when we see that, it's usually a lot of conversations are had around that. But let's kind of dip into the, because I know you've spent some time with the exit planning. What are some things people can be thinking about from like a planning perspective as they're selling their company? Because, you know, I know there's obviously taxes are due, and depending on what they're doing, there might be some other strategies. Are there strategies that you've kind of seen work, or what strategies do people employ in different variations?
Sure. I think the basis is, generally speaking, business owners spend about 95% of their time working in their business, and only 5% of their time, roughly that, working on their business. So from an exit and transition planning standpoint, that formula pretty much needs to get balanced, if not more focused on working on the business, because that's really what it's about in terms of value creation or preparing a company for sale in the process. So as we talked earlier, not having the company be either solely or virtually dependent on the business owner, and especially in cases where the business owner is the key point of customer contact or owns the primary customer relationships. That makes a dependency situation even worse and with even higher perceived risk by buyers. And again, as I mentioned, many companies have a key point of failure in an individual who has specific or specialized expertise, which is not, or which a business owner can't duplicate otherwise. That's another point of failure. We talked about the accounting, but then probably the next area where business owners value concerns is if they have tremendous dependency on either a small number of clients or especially one very large client. The rule of thumb in general is that no client should be worth more than about 10% of your business, certainly 30% on the top end. So if a business owner is working well in advance, a key part of that exit and transition planning strategy is to begin to diversify the customer base and create less reliance on one individual. By the same token, growth is an additional value creator for companies. So if a business is either in decline or stagnant, a focus on strategies to drive the top line in the marketplace. The same goes for any kind of product line diversification. If there is more than one revenue stream in a company, that's most often far more attractive to buyers and more of a value creation tool. But other factors include looking at the debt structure on the business so that the business isn't over-leveraged. If they're managing payables and receivables in a consistent manner, if they're managing inventory levels in a consistent manner, all of these factors play into the perceived value of a company and can affect the multiplier against profits substantially in many cases.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I think, certainly. So let me ask you this. When you talked about having between 10 and 30% for like a single client, let's just say somebody's got 50% of the revenue is dependent upon one client. How do you address that? I mean, to me, that seems like it's really hard to address that factor because you're not going to get rid of that one client. But yet, in order to diversify, you'd have to grow the business significantly in other areas to dilute it. So how do you address that with somebody?
Well, it depends a little bit on the company and the dynamics. It's a fairly case-by-case situation. And yes, you're correct, Kirk. You definitely don't want to dilute the sales within your key client. But oftentimes it's a matter of what the sales approach is. If it's a matter of diversification of the product line, so you can bring in new client prospects. You know, as an example of the sensitivity of that, it's my understanding that for small businesses, Walmart won't allow their sales to be more than 30% of any client's total revenue for that very reason, because they don't, if they for some reason want to reduce sales or eliminate that company as a vendor, they don't want to be in a position where they feel like they've put that company out of business. So that's just one example of the kind of sensitivity that occurs around customer concentration, but definitely a focus on additional sales channel. It may be restructuring the sales force, changing compensation, incentive structures to incentivize salespeople or business development people to target new prospects in order to diversify that customer base.
Yeah, that makes sense. What are some of the risks that business owners should be aware of when they're selling their business?
Well, besides the emotional aspects of that, I think it's important for business owners to understand that, and I will tell you this again from experience, we talk with many business owners who have a very incorrect expectation on the value of their business. So they've heard stories about some other company in the same industry or a related industry that sold for some extravagant number. But again, as we've talked about here, there are so many variables and factors that can impact valuation, even among two companies in the exact same industry, or even two competitors in the same industry. And one will sell for more than the other for some of the reasons that are not visible from the outside of a company. But it's also, I think, important to understand for business owners, again, as they say, many wake up and say it's time to sell. And they'll call us and say, I want my company sold in 60 days or 90 days. Selling a company is a very time-consuming, highly laborious process in the best of circumstances. The national average, whether it's small deals or large deals, from the time the client signs an engagement letter with a some kind of a representative, whether it's a business broker or an investment banking firm, is 7 to 9 months in the best of circumstances. And we always try to set expectations for clients that literally selling a company is like having a full-time job on top of a full-time job. It's a lot of work. Someone like ourselves or, you know, some of our counterparts in the industry, a big part of the value that we provide is to reduce as much of that work for them as possible and manage the front end and the buyer process as we possibly can. But I would also say that like a business owner should be working with you as an expert in your area of investments post-sale, they need to be working with experts on the front end of the deal. I've always been a believer in running companies that know what you know how to do well and do it, know what you don't know how to do well and hire an expert for you. So many business owners make the mistake of being penny wise and pound foolish and not hiring an expert investment advisor to work with them through the process, a tax expert, and most importantly, an M&A qualified attorney, not their family attorney, not a local business attorney, but someone who has expertise and a track record in mergers and acquisitions, legal contract work. These professionals almost always pay for themselves, sometimes many times over in the process.
No, that's good. That's good advice. So as we get, as we kind of wrap the show up here, any final thoughts you think we haven't covered, you think are important?
No, I think I think we touched on a lot of key points. The key is to be aware of the personal dynamics in any deal, the challenges around selling a company, and the amount of time involved. Those are all key aspects of it. But it, most importantly, is the planning work they need to do in advance of going to market with their business. It's their baby. It's their entity. It is truly their legacy in many regards, and why not do everything you can to invest in advance in optimizing that opportunity?
Yeah, no, appreciate that. So one final question here as we wrap it up. I always like to ask this question because this podcast is about legacy. You know, the context is how you want to be remembered. So, you know, let's say you're at the end of your life, you're kind of writing your own obituary. How do you want to be portrayed? How do you want to be remembered?
You know, I think besides the obvious answers to those questions, for me personally anyway, around family and friends and your children and you know, how they think of you and how you help them grow and develop. From a broader perspective, I'd say, you know, it's, were you able to give back? And that's part of the reason I do the work I do now is from everything I've learned, if you don't take what you've learned and share that with others, that's a shame to me. So if you can help other people with their legacy, then for me, there's tremendous satisfaction in that.
Great. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show, Cameron. Where can people find more about you?
Well, they can always find me on LinkedIn, Cameron Bishop, or again, I work with a great virtual business brokerage, lower middle market M&A firm with the very interesting name Raincatcher. We believe it's easier to catch rain than to make rain. And we're at www.raincatcher.com.
Great. Well, thanks again for coming on the show, Cameron. We'll definitely have you back on in the future, but thanks for sharing your wisdom with us.
Thanks, Kirk. I appreciate the opportunity. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Legacy Podcast. Now, if you can do us a favor and leave a review, any type of stars on any platform that you use, it would be greatly appreciated. For more information about us, the other co-hosts, and the Legacy Podcast, go to businesslegacypodcast.com. That's businesslegacypodcast.com. Have a great day.